Hello and welcome to Series 2 of Squad, the podcast from the military children's charity Little Troopers. Hello, I'm Joel M, TV presenter and magician. If this is your first time here, then welcome. Squad is the place to come if you're a part of a military family or if you have an interest in hearing about extraordinary people's life stories. In this series, we'll be speaking with incredible people who have achieved amazing things. From sports stars to actors and Michelin star chefs, we will be hearing about how their experiences growing up in a military family has impacted their lives and careers. We always like to kick things off with some of your squad stories. We know that military life can be bonkers at the best of times, and it's good to share these things, either so we can all have a giggle or maybe give advice and support each other. Let's see who we're hearing from today.
Hi, I'm Will, and since my dad is in the army, we move around quite a lot. We've been in Thorny Island twice now, and we've been in London. Moving around can be difficult sometimes because you might not get to see your friends anymore that you've made in other places, but you make new friends and it's actually quite cool to see new things.
Hi, this is Daisy. My dad is in the army and my mum also used to be in the army. When we lived overseas, everybody knew each other because we'd all been together since we were little. We all just became really close. And then when we lived in Cyprus, that bond became stronger. We'd go to the beach after school and just hang out with our friends. And when we moved back to England, we all stayed together again and we just were really close.
Oh, what amazing stories. Thank you, guys. It's so cool to hear about the community and support that military families and children can offer each other. Now, let's get down to business. It's a big question in life. What do you want to be when you grow up? For me, I knew I wanted to be a magician of all things since I was just 5 years old. Don't know what made me want to do that, but I never thought about doing anything else. But I never dreamed that one day that would take me to being a Blue Peter presenter. It's so strange how these things sometimes unfold when you just follow your passion. In this episode, we're speaking to Shelley Conn. Shelley is a British actor who starred in some of the biggest series in recent years, including Bridgerton and Good Omens, amongst a glittering career on screen and on stage. Shelley was born into a military family, her father being in the British Army, which led to the family moving around military bases. Shelley lived in Germany and Gibraltar with her family before settling in England, where she studied at one of the leading drama schools in Britain. I'm actually so excited to speak to Shelley. I am such a big fan of Bridgerton. It must have been so much fun to get into the costumes, to be in the fancy house, all the music. Listen, I'm a Blue Peter presenter, and yet I'm truly jealous of her job. I wonder if Shelley kept any bits from the costume or set. Maybe I'll see if I can steal some off her. Oh, I have so many questions for her. Right, let's get into it. Shelley, welcome to Squad, and lovely to meet you as well.
And lovely to meet you too. Thanks for having me.
Oh, we're so glad you're here. Now, you've just got back from filming in Manchester, I believe. Can you tell me anything about that, or is it top secret stuff?
It's fairly top secret, but I can tell you that it's an ITV drama based around family relationships.
Ooh, okay. Not too much being given away there. We're going to have to watch it.
I can't tell you too much.
No.
Yeah, you'll have to sit down and watch it.
That's always the way. Do you have any idea when it might be out, or is that still to be confirmed?
Some point next year, possibly more towards the sort of autumn end of the year, I would imagine.
Yeah.
But I'll let you know when I know.
Absolutely. We'll keep a lookout. Well, listen, Shelley, you have had the most unbelievable career. This is just one small part of it, the show you're working on now. Can you give us your top three career highlights? I know there's a lot to choose from, but if you had to pick three, what would you say?
Yeah, gosh, there's been a lot. And I suppose for one, I would say as a highlight is the variation of all the different things I've been able to do across the board, from film and TV and stage work and radio and all the other things that come along. I just love the fact that I've been able to do so many different things. I'm going to call that a highlight, if that's okay. But I will name a couple of other things. Over the summer, I did a play at the National Theatre, which was a dream come true for me. I've never worked there before. And I think ever since I left drama school 25 years ago or something like that, I'd always wanted to work there. So that was an actual dream come true. That was a real highlight. And the other one would be, I mean, I've done sort of like small parts in big films and I played a lead role in a small film, but there was something so special about kind of playing the title character of a piece of work. That was really, really cool.
For people who don't know what
Nina's
that was.
Heavenly Delights.
I was going to ask. Yeah, absolutely.
I played a chef in Glasgow.
Wow.
Opening her own restaurant and coming to terms with the death of her father.
I see.
It was quite poignant.
Can you
really
cook
lovely.
In real life, or was it all smoke and mirrors?
A little bit of smoke and mirrors. I'm not a bad cook. I'm not a chef.
No.
And I'm a cook. But I do remember on that, they were like, oh, don't worry. I was like, I'm not the best. I've done a bit of training. And they were like, don't worry, we'll get a hand double in for you. And then when I saw the show, I was like, wow, this hand double is a man with the hairiest knuckles I've ever seen.
That's great. At least you're still getting the credit for it. It's okay.
That's true. That's true. I'll take it. I'll take the knife skills with
absolutely
the hairy knuckles.
Well, look, you've gone on to do absolutely amazing things. But I want to go back to the very beginning, Shelley. What was it like and what was your experience growing up as a military child?
Do you know, my memories of army life, as we used to call it, are really good memories. I feel like there was a real sense of community in a way that I don't know that I've experienced since, other than possibly in companies of actors on productions. And there was a real sense of freedom. Mm. You know, it's only once my dad came out of the army and I went to a regular school, I could really feel the benefits of the life I'd had as a military kid. So the sense of freedom, the sense of community, and I honestly believe there was a sort of open-mindedness that I really, really appreciate I experienced in my childhood. Because people are coming and going all the time, aren't they? You know, it's kind of like you join a school and you're new. And because the other people around you are used to that, they accept you very quickly. Yes. And vice versa, you knew that you could do that for somebody else as they're walking through the door.
Right.
That's really counted for a lot in terms of my sense of self, my sense of independence, my sense of relationship.
Yeah.
And I think we kind of got that for free. Nobody's teaching you that directly. It's just life skills that you learn. And I don't know whether that's kind of time specific. I mean, you know, I was born in the late 70s and so this was sort of like my memory of the sort of 80s. Mm. So in itself, being an 80s kid is its own thing.
Yes.
But I loved it. I really loved it.
I'm very jealous that you got to be an 80s kid. I was 90s and apparently the 80s were just fantastic, but it's okay. So you yourself, did you actually move around much?
Yeah. So my dad, he had his whole career in the army. And even when he retired from the army, he worked for the army at the officer training corps. So when I was a baby, we moved around a fair bit within England, but I wouldn't have remembered that. Before I was one, we were posted to what was West Germany at the time. And we spent 6 years there. And then I did 2 years in Gibraltar, which was such a brilliant contrast. And at that stage, we were all starting to look into going into secondary school. And that's when I think my dad didn't love the idea of boarding schools. And that is a bit of a chapter for me that I always think, wow, what would that have been like, the military boarding schools? I mean, this is obviously way before Harry Potter, but I just thought that would have just been the most fun thing. But we settled in suburban Hampshire. And as I say, my dad worked for the OTC, so London Officer Training Corps. So that then became like a new sort of, well, it became what I still think of as a sort of spiritual home. And then we sort of settled. But even with his work and from all his experiences from his career before he had a family, he brought that into our lives. So, you know, how much travel you get from being a military kid. And again, we sort of take it for granted, but I never did. I always loved it.
Right.
And it meant that he then became really interested to take us to places that he'd been to before we were born. So I still feel like we had that travel element and the sort of, I'm assuming it's perks of the job. I just thought it was normal that, you know, you would sort of like get army issue stationery and stuff like that from, you know. So it's still, the army was still definitely in our lives, even though we were officially settled.
That makes sense. So was your dad deployed at any point when you were growing up?
Previous to my being born, he did serve in Northern Ireland.
Okay.
My dad sort of made a pact that he didn't want to marry until he'd finished that section of his life. Even though at that point when he got engaged, he was sent back. He had sort of left by the time the Iraq war was happening and the Gulf. But there's other members of the family who are also in the army. So we did feel it a little through them. And as with everybody's family, you're sort of, I don't know, we understand a sort of familial experience.
Yes.
If that makes sense.
No, it does make sense.
It's kind of, even if stories are untold or even if they are told in a way that is somehow not obvious, we feel it.
That makes
sense.
We can
feel family experiences.
Yeah, I think you're probably right.
Yeah, and I think that children of deployed parents have a sense of that kind of stuff without even needing to talk about what that knowing is.
Yeah, it's interesting because speaking to you and other people on the podcast, you have such a different perspective on life from these experiences in childhood.
Oh, really?
It sounds like actually you quite enjoyed it growing up and you maybe had a sense of enjoying it and being grateful for it at the time, but maybe, and in some cases, you don't really understand that till you're older. But it's interesting to know that actually you quite appreciated that when you were growing up. Just for clarity with me, did you then, you had other family members serving as well as your dad?
Yeah, so after my dad joined the army, his younger brother, they were pretty inseparable growing up. So he kind of felt, oh, I've got to go and join Dave, that's my dad, and Neville, my uncle. My dad was a big Chuck Berry fan, so he was known as Chuck when he joined the army. And when his brother joined, he became known as Chick. So there was Chick and Chuck. And they both had these incredible careers of starting, you know, just as not cadets, privates, I don't know, they were squaddies, right?
Sure.
And then, and they made their way up through the ranks. And in the 70s, I think that was quite a thing for, I mean, look, I don't know if anybody, this is interesting to anybody, but I think one of the reasons I found it, all those positive things I've just told you about my military life is because we're an immigrant family. So to sort of feel, you know, to have an immigrant family come and feel this sense of belonging was a huge thing. And I think that when I came out of military life and came into sort of regular suburban life, that's when the migrant stuff came up and you're like, oh, okay. Oh, actually, I think the military stuff was more supportive.
Right. Interesting.
Yeah. And again, I mean, I'm now sort of like that far along in my life that I can make that distinction and that comparison. But I think, and I've also been able to learn to take the positives. It wasn't easy changing schools all the time. It wasn't easy making friends all the time.
Yeah.
But I can now see it that those are skills that I have learned and I can put into place. Because as an actor, that you're doing that all the time.
Right.
All the time. You're starting a new job and you feel like a new girl every single time. I had it at the National Theatre over the summer. You know, I remember being in the room and kind of going, wow, here we go again. Here we go again. And it doesn't get easier, but experience teaches you, right? And I think if you've had those experiences early on, then you don't, you find the resilience. And I think that that's really useful.
Yeah.
And I can appreciate that now.
It's almost as if growing up as a military child has prepared you perfectly for doing this sort of job. Because anything in entertainment is very much like that, isn't it? It's touch and go.
Yeah.
And it's new experiences, having to get ready for anything. And really, it's probably hard to train for that if you weren't in some sort of situation like you were. So you really have taken the positives from it. And I think you probably can do that from any situation. But you, I suppose, you've chosen to look at it that way and chosen to take the lessons from it, which is very, very, very cool.
Yeah, I think the adaptability, the flexibility, the, you know, trying to see things from another point of view, it's in my work as an actor when I'm inhabiting a character and I'm on a stage or a set, but equally in the lifestyle of it. You know, I mean, I do know a lot of very talented actors that I maybe trained or came up with when I was younger who haven't continued in the work because the lifestyle is so hard. They can't bear not knowing what's next. Oh, knowing that they're going to be living out of a bag for the next year or being in a place on the other side of the world.
Yeah.
That all was kind of, I'd already done all of that.
Yeah.
And now, as I said to you, I think, you know, one of the highlights for me is the travel, is the variation, is the fact that I have a richness that comes from seeing different walks of life. And then I think, without thinking about it too much, it means that I don't have to try too hard to kind of imagine myself as another person.
Yes. Well, it sounds like in general, you've grown a very high uncertainty tolerance. That is something that for the average person, you're right, they just cannot deal with that. And it maybe gives you an edge in your line of work.
Yeah, I would say the people that I think are successful are those that have good empathy and have good flexibility. Don't you find the people that you admire the most when you meet them up close, often they are really personable and they really can communicate and they know themselves.
Yes.
And look, don't get me wrong. I still think that's a sort of practice. I love that I can do this podcast and be able to speak to younger people about this, because I would say maybe you can think about that a little bit for yourself, because I do understand that thing of being in another new bedroom and kind of, oh, it just doesn't feel like mine, and going into another new school and just feeling so strange, that feeling of strangeness, but kind of trying to hold on to that and feel like, you know what? I can guarantee that everybody else in this room has felt that.
Mm.
And maybe they're not feeling it right now. But if I can know that about myself, then maybe that will resonate and meet somebody else's resonance of that same strangeness. And then that can transform into familiarity and then friendliness, you know?
Yeah. Goodness me, it's such wonderful advice. And I think you're absolutely right with the people who you do find to be warm and impressive and go on to do great things. They tend to have that quality of self-awareness and they're able to reflect and use the things that were maybe more difficult in the past and reshape them into something that can help them. So it's a really good perspective. I'm actually curious, touching on the moving schools type of thing, do you recall how many times that actually happened to you growing up? How many times did you have to move?
Yeah, I do remember 3 primary schools. By then we'd settled, so 1 secondary school.
Okay.
But 3 primary schools and an infant school previous to that.
Okay.
And I mean, I was at kindergarten rather than nursery, you know, because it was in Germany.
Yes.
And I do remember my first days each place.
Mm.
I do. I can remember even the itchiness of the uniform or the kind of my hair was too tight. I can remember feeling cold, you know, like the socks didn't come up long enough. And, you know, look, that's not necessarily different from anybody's first day at school, really, is it?
Mm.
But again, and I can only say this with hindsight, so not to make it feel sort of patronizing, but just as an offering, as somebody that has felt it and done it, I think it's a great thing if you can look at a challenge and see it as an opportunity.
Right. Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
And I sort of think that if you're from a military family, it's likely you've got people in your family that have that way of thinking anyway. And I think it's a good thing if you can kind of see, well, how can I fit into that then? What, you know, I don't necessarily have the same tasks as at hand as my mum or dad, but what do they do that I find interesting or impressive? And how can I put that into my day? Or how can I sort of use these challenges to find out more about myself?
Yeah. Goodness me, it's a very, very inspiring message. I'm now rethinking a bunch of things in my own life at this point as well.
Well, good. That's good, because we never stop learning. And I think that's the thing. And it's one of the reasons I was so pleased to be asked to do this, because I've always thought that a lot of that came from my military life.
Yes. Yeah. Do you think there were any experiences you had growing up, like to do with schools and moving around, that probably just felt relatively normal to you, but looking back now, you realize they were probably quite unique to you as someone growing up in a military family?
I do remember sort of, it's when you come out of that life and you can make the comparison. So I sort of, does not everybody wear high-tech trainers, which was the, you know, standard issue brand of the British Army in the 1980s, which when I started running, nice. That's what I was given by my dad, managed to snaffle a pair. I was like, so it's not normal to put kind of like those really rock hard ration biscuits from your dad's when he went to camp, to put that in your lunchbox. Or actually, this is a good one. I do remember bringing a boyfriend home in my teens. And first of all, he was a bit like, oh my God, Sergeant Major Cot, you know, like just the shaking of the handshake being a bit too much. And it just occurred to me that what we used as an umbrella stand in our hall was like the shell of an enormous gun cartridge. And I was like, do you not have one of those brass things in your house? And they're like, no, we don't, actually.
No, actually, no. Funny.
And
that,
so for boyfriends, you could almost see their heart beating meeting your dad. You know? It was just our dad.
It's scary enough meeting your girlfriend's dad when he's not a sergeant. That's terrifying.
Exactly.
Oh, my goodness me. That's so funny.
Yeah. And instead of especially by the time I reached my teens and I'd sort of found my tribe a bit more, I just think I really like the fact that it was something unique to my childhood and my family. And and I liked it. I was really learning how to make it part of my identity, I think, by then.
Mm. Now, you said that you settled in a secondary school, so you didn't move after that point. So you went straight the whole way through secondary school. So did you find that difficult when you were at school, or was that actually okay for you in terms of going through exams and that sort of thing?
Yeah, I would say, look, I was lucky enough to be a fairly academic kid, whatever that means. So I never had problems with schoolwork. But I would say that those unconscious social skills that I had learned at primary school and in moving definitely helped me make my way through the latter part of my educational life. Because when you hit puberty, it's hard enough. And you're, and then, you know, you throw in school and exams and then all the petty politics of school. There definitely were moments when I thought, God, I wish we were back at an army school, because I just think people would have understood. Mm. And I think, you know, I don't know whether this is true or not, but I found the actual schools much more suitable to me. They were just, somehow they seemed more holistic. Mm. Okay. Though it wasn't just about learning the academia. It was learning about yourself. And there was like a huge range of arts, extracurricular activities and sports. And that's where the sort of acting and the drama came in, because I had discovered that at primary school. And at that point, it was a way for me to engage my imagination, as I said, in a sort of setting that felt really accepting and encouraging of that. And then later on, as I, you know, we did settle and I went to secondary school, I think it was a form of escape for me. And then I went on and I did a degree in theatre arts, which was a brilliant course and very hands-on and really experimental and very creative, but it was still a degree. And I think I was sort of telling myself, oh, you can still be a teacher. Oh, you can still go into something else because you'll have a degree.
Right.
But I do remember kind of at that point telling my parents, listen, I think I want to be a conventional actress. I want to be a classical actress. I think I have to go to drama school in London. And I felt like I was coming out to them because I just didn't know what that meant, because the army life had been, I don't know, there was a kind of go with the flow sort of feel to it. And we weren't an academic family. So nobody had been to university before. It was just kind of, you know, like I say, my dad joined the army when he was 17. So suddenly I'm 17 going, oh, well, I'm not ready. Right. I don't think I'm an army person, you know, and having to sort of figure it out.
Yeah. Do you think they ever thought that you'd want to join the military, or did they have an inkling you were probably going to go a different direction?
I think they had figured out that we weren't that way thinking. At that point, because my dad was working for the OTC, he would have and still would recommend that if you do want to join the army, doing it through the TA or doing it through the officer training corps is like such a brilliant way to do it, because you get both. And so I sort of always knew, I mean, my parents are really progressive and they're really open-minded. And so I knew that they would just be up for whatever I wanted to do. I think it was more about admitting it to myself and, you know, just saying something out loud, you know, it sort of like feels like such a confessional somehow.
I understand how that feels. Well, yeah, I grew up in a very, very religious household and I decided I wanted to be a magician. So that went down.
Wow.
Well, but of course, I know, you know, it felt like this, like, oh, I need to get it off my chest, and then nobody cared. It just remains what you'd said there. We weren't sure that you were going to go down a conventional route. Who's we, obviously parents, are there siblings in the family as well, or just you?
Yes, I have two older sisters who we're all really close in age. So we sort of all grew up together. But yeah, my mum and dad, and like I said, his brother, my uncle. And so they were also in Germany at the same time. And so I have cousins who were also army kids that we shared family memories with.
Sure. And did any of those guys or your siblings, did they go on to join the military, or did they go off and do something different too?
No. From that uncle's family, his wife's nephew is still in, hang on, I don't even know if he's Marines or SAS now, but he's pretty hardcore. He's amazing.
It's a different league, that stuff, isn't it? They're tough.
Next level.
Yeah.
When we do see him, I do kind of try and grab him and get stories and kind of memories and like speak to his kids and, you know,
right.
There's an understanding between those few people. So at big family gatherings, there's a kind of, we all understand. Yeah. Got you.
So Shelley, in your secondary school, did your teachers or peers have any understanding about your military background? And were you offered any support in terms of that?
No, at my secondary school, there wasn't really any thought about the fact I was from a military family. My dad was posted to Cyprus, so he was away for, and I believe I was at secondary school at that point, or late primary school. And there wasn't really an understanding of having that absence of parent. I do remember that. Mm. And actually, oh my gosh, my dad found and gave back to me a letter that I'd written to him while he was in Cyprus. So I think I was on the cusp. I was either late year six or early year seven, 11-ish. And I'd written about sports day and this and that. And I'd written every line in a different color felt it pen, like the rainbow colors. Oh. And to me, that just really told me who I was at that point in my life. I was kind of thinking I was grown up enough to sort of like write a really well-written second draft, probably, of a letter to my dad, but still such a child that I was writing it in, you know, these different colors and just this real sort of attention to detail. I'd forgotten I'd sent it, but my dad kept everything.
Oh, he kept it.
I remember the photos back and sort of going, oh, he's wearing a different beret while he's there. And all the fatigues are different and all that kind of stuff. But Cyprus is a place that he made sure he took us back to afterwards, even though we weren't there with him as a family.
Right.
You know, he wanted to share that with us. Mm. And also just because as a place, it's incredibly historically interesting, you know. So, yeah, I do remember sort of like feeling like all the overlaps of your life, you know, school life, home life, social life, there being a kind of absence because my dad wasn't there.
Yeah.
For sure, I remember that.
Yeah, and there's challenges that definitely would have come with that as well. I know, speaking to you, have an overwhelmingly positive attitude towards the whole thing and growing up being a bit different in that regard. Were there any things, though, that you really do remember going, actually, yeah, that was challenging?
And yes.
Whether you knew it at the time or just looking back now, were there things that stood out?
Yeah, I think the biggest challenge was the absence of my dad. Even so, you know what it's like. If they're away for a few months, I'm sure some kids are experiencing it when it's reaching into years. And whether or not, you know, I mean, even when he left the army and was at the OTC, it was every Tuesday he'd have to stay over because there was a late thing that he had to do at work. And sometimes he would have to go off on camp for the entire summer holidays. And you really feel that. Mm. I mean, you know, I was always the kid that didn't have the parents there for parents' evening, or, you know, they absolutely made sure they tried to see every school play I was in, but they weren't able to. And my mum didn't drive. So, you know, there was a lot of things that if dad wasn't there, there was a lot of compensating that we all had to do as a family. And like I say, I think I found it important to take those experiences and try and alchemize them into ways that can be useful now. But that's not to say that I don't understand how hard it can be to feel like, oh, we're doing without. That's how it feels, doesn't it? It does. It feels like you're in deficit. It feels like there's a sort of negative imprint somehow. And that absolutely was a defining experience of military life. But I think that might be one of the reasons that being a creative has sort of like come into my world. Because like I say, I've just filled it. I had to go into my imagination. I had to find some form of escapism, some journeying, some, I don't know. I don't know how to put it, but it was,
It makes sense.
And then I remember the pride of when my, you know, one school play that I didn't think dad could make it to. And when I say backstage, I probably just mean, you know, like in the classroom. It's not like we had like
in the hall.
Yeah, exactly. I remember somebody going, oh God, Shelley, your dad is there and he's got the shiniest shoes, you know, because he'd come straight from work and nobody else's dad was in the army. So they didn't know about polishing shoes. My dad's shoes were immaculate, you know.
Yes. Oh, that's really sweet. So there was an element of it then being special when he could make those sorts of things. Not that he obviously always made the effort, but as you say, sometimes it just wasn't possible. So that's quite sweet. You have core memories around that as well.
Trying to compensate. I mean, you know, it doesn't, not much, but somehow, you know, I don't know how the algorithm was working this for me on my Instagram feed, but sometimes I've seen a few videos of, you know, daddy's coming home and the kids bit. Oh my God, it just sends me right over the edge. I'm in floods. To see that kind of reunion is just so, I know it. I know that feeling of hugging my dad in uniform, you know, and you haven't seen them for ages.
Yeah, that's going to hit you differently than most people watching those videos. And I know the videos you mean, you don't even have to have been a military child to feel those. So I imagine it's a different level if you have an element of connection to that. So Shelley, obviously we now know you've gone on to do amazing things in the acting world. You said you had an inkling that you were maybe going to go down a slightly less conventional path, but when was it for you that you thought, right, no, I want to be in acting specifically? Was there like a eureka moment, or was it a very gradual thing for you?
I think in that it's both. The gradual is because it's just what I always did and it was where I felt most suited. So I still have those moments now where I'm preparing for a role or reading a script going, well, this is no different from when I played Dorothy in The Wizard of Oz at school a lot of years ago. But there's not tons of difference. You know, it's kind of like I still have the same attitude towards the work. But like I said, there was a sort of penny drop moment where I realized I had to take it seriously. You know, on the one hand, I'm still a child playing dress up. And on the other hand, I do remember thinking, well, hang on a minute, I have to commit to this in a way that means I'm shutting off possibly other options and I have to just find something that's a truth about me and speak it aloud. And I think that was probably this moment at university where I actually totally unconsciously, I'd been sort of working and saving during the summer, parents supporting me financially as well. But I'd been saving my student loans to pay for the drama school fees.
Wow, that's a commitment.
And I didn't really know that I was doing that. Sure. Obviously, I must have known, but it was not unconscious, but subconscious, I think. And I remember thinking, wow, so I'm going to have to tell people that that's what I'm doing. I want to move to London and go to a drama school.
Yeah, it's not a common path, my goodness me. I thought I remember doing a similar thing. I used to save the small bits of pocket money I used to get from mum and dad to go and then buy props because I wanted to be a magician full time. I would either buy props or I'd buy things in shops to sell at school to then go back and then make more money so I could then afford to not have to get a weekend job so I could do magic gigs instead. So
amazing.
Yeah, so I must have just been subconsciously veering in that direction and it sounds like that sort of thing with you as well. The question is then, so growing up in a military family, you've obviously learned a lot of skills and it sounds like you are a little bit of an alchemist where you can take these things and get lessons out of it. But in terms of actual skills, do you think there's anything you either learned yourself or from your family in that space that have helped you, I suppose, now, but also on the way up? Like, did you have to learn things like discipline in a way that other kids wouldn't or things like that? Was there anything that really helped you?
Yeah, I think that a sense of routine just sort of came for free in a military household. You know, my dad would have phrases that he, I found out he told my son, I think last half term when my son went and stayed there for a couple of days, he said, yeah, no, attack the day. And that's what my dad used to say, attack the day, not carpe diem, but that was his version. I remember that. And I got, you know, I used to run with my dad. I was a runner. I used to run track for my county for a short time, but it was through my dad and his, you know, I mean, the sort of the amount of miles that he's put in, I sort of shared a little of that.
Lovely.
But even just breathing patterns, he would teach me how to breathe in pace. And for me, I think everyone should have a breathing practice. I think it's good practice, but as an actor, you need to know how to use your breath. So wasn't necessarily the same techniques that I would be using on stage, but for sure it was kind of, oh yeah, I know that world. I know how to do that. So sort of like sweet little things like that. But yeah, sense of routine, sense of discipline. One that I'm not sure I loved, which was hierarchy. You know, I'm the youngest. I'm the youngest of three. I feel like I've spent quite a lot of time trying to break away from that.
So you did drama school. When was your first big break, if you want to call it that? I know it's usually a series of small breaks, but for you, was there a moment when you went, oh, actually, I'm on to something now?
Yeah, like you say, I had a series of small breaks. I got my very first acting job the day I left drama school. And I mean, it was like Nurse 2 in a British movie. You know, I remember turning up and it was like, wow, I'm Nurse 2, you know. And the actress I worked with for the very first time professionally, I've worked with since, and I've long admired her. And, it, you know, she remembered me and it was just so lovely. She remembered the project and it was just, it was lovely. And
gorgeous.
There was a series of that kind of thing. I do think I did have to kind of do the rounds, do quite a lot of, I mean, rep theatre wasn't really a thing by the time I came, but my version of that mainly with, you know, an episode of this or this or this. And I remember the first TV series I got, which was a BBC cop show where I met my husband, you know, that felt like a really big breakthrough, as did Nina's Heavenly Delights, where I played the lead role in a film. And then, you know, sort of like, I mean, it was a big moment. I do remember, you know, the first American job I got, kind of going, wow, okay, this is Hollywood. Okay, that's different.
Yeah.
Actually, I do remember getting a job where I was filming on the Universal lot at the studios and being able to drive in, you know, tap your pass, seen through security, drive up to your trailer was amazing. And my parents come and visit. And for me, you know, having, I don't know, 20, 30 years previous to that as a child, my dad taking us around Universal Studios, me then in a golf buggy taking them around, was, that was pretty cool.
Oh, that's full circle. That's lovely. Shelley, have you had any moments in your career that have been those pinch me moments? You're like, oh my goodness, I've made it. I'm a star. I've done it.
Wow. I don't know if I could ever see myself as a star, but I mean, I have plenty of pinch me moments. One that really sticks out, and it came back to me recently, because when I was still quite young, I did two long seasons at the RSC, the Royal Shakespeare Company in Stratford-upon-Avon, and we transferred to the West End. But in the second production, it was All's Well That Ends Well. I was playing Diana, and the Countess Rousillon was played by Judi Dench.
Oh, wow. Goodness,
and I don't know any actor that wouldn't find that a pinch me moment. I do remember being on stage with her thinking, wow, you are so brilliant and so fun, because just before we were on stage, kind of being really serious and Shakespearean, you were high kicking backstage, doing literal can-can high kicks in preparation for you sneaking into Les Mis, which had just opened next door in the West End. And it'd been a lifelong ambition for her to be in Les Mis. And so they managed to make it work so that in between her scenes during our show, she rushed out the stage door and went into the next door stage door and was at the barricades of Les Mis. And I just thought, wow, I can't believe I've witnessed that.
Yeah. I feel like I've got a real sneak peek behind the curtain with Judi Dench there that I wasn't expecting, but absolutely needed to make my soul feel better. So thank you.
Yeah, for sure.
Shelley, I want to ask one selfish question. I'm a big Bridgerton fan.
Okay.
You got to work on this show. Can you tell me a little bit about that? What was it like working on that show with Netflix? I mean, that's the tippity top of showbiz these days.
No, I have to say, with the pandemic and lockdown, it was a bit kind of a bolt out of the blue to get offered a role on Bridgerton. And for my sins, I didn't know anything about the show. Season one had already happened. I was in season two.
Yep.
But flipping heck, did I know about it once I started? You know, you go in. I mean, like, it's just immense. And my first day on set was a ball scene.
Wow.
It was the Queen's gold ball. I found it really hard to close my mouth all day. But everything from the wigs, the costumes, the actors, the writing, the design, the set, the cinematography, it's all just so special. I absolutely loved that summer. It was brilliant, brilliant highlight of my career.
It just seemed larger than life. I can imagine struggling to not just go, oh my gosh, you have to remember to do your job at some point because you're just taking it all in. That's so much fun.
I absolutely, I really had to remind myself to be professional at lots of points during that.
There's a skill in that as well. Right, Shelley, I would sit and talk to you all day, but I do have questions from our amazing listeners. So, Duncan, let's hear from you first.
Hi, Shelley. This is Duncan. I wanted to know if there was any part of being a military child that has helped you in your career as an actor.
Hi, Duncan. Thank you for that question. It's a really good one and something that actually has occurred to me lots, that my life as a military kid absolutely has helped me as an actor, because I think being an actor isn't just about being able to perform on stage or on set. It's also about being able to inhabit a certain way of life. And that's exactly what you have to do when you're a military kid. I think you have to get really used to being flexible and adaptable and changing to new situations. There's a lot of newness. And I think what that did for me as a military kid was teach me about myself, so that no matter where I go in the world for an acting job, or no matter who I'm playing, whether it's a goodie, a baddie, somebody that's like me or not like me, I know who I am and who I come back to. And I think that life as a military kid really set me up in good stead for that. There's a certain resilience that comes from being a military kid, which has really, really helped me as an actor. And I hope can help you in whatever kind of life you go on to lead.
It's a gorgeous piece of advice. Thank you, Duncan. Caitlin, you're up next.
Hi. I found writing and being creative an escape from some of the challenges of growing up in a military family. Was it the same for you?
Oh, Caitlin, I'm so glad to hear that creative writing and creativity in general has been really helpful to you. I would say absolutely that was something that was helpful to me. All the challenges that come up for you being a military kid, creativity is always, always going to be helpful, whether it's just journaling or if it's creating something with other people, pieces of art or music or any form of expression, I think is really, really helpful. It taps into parts of you that you might need to deal with and helps you put them to use somehow. Funnily enough, I would say the first thing I remember saying I wanted to be when somebody said, hey, what do you want to be when you grow up, was a writer. And I don't really know why that went to the wayside. I've got a funny feeling it might have been because somebody told me I wasn't good enough, but hey, I'll deal with that and I'll go back to it. Because actually what I did as, you know, I took writing as an actor and became an interpreter of that writing. So I still believe it comes from this kernel of creative writing. And I think that's still what I connect to. So I'm just going to encourage you to keep doing it and don't let anyone tell you that you can't do it, because you can. You're doing it right now and there's no reason why you shouldn't carry on. I think it's brilliant you do that. And I'm actually inspired by you to maybe I need to go and do some writing.
Look at that. Well, thank you, Caitlin, for your question. That's inspired a little bit of a thought for Shelley as well. Shelley, we've come to the end of our time. Thank you so, so much for answering my questions and the questions from our listeners so brilliantly. Do you have any final words of wisdom that you'd like to share with the young people listening that are also from military families? Anything to wrap us up?
Oh, thanks, Joel. And thanks, everyone, for listening. Look, I think it's been so great to have the opportunity to talk about my experiences as a military kid. I think for me, the main thing I would love to pass on is to say that I understand that there are challenges. I understand that things that don't always feel easy and can feel really uncomfortable about this life. But I would just encourage everybody to say, if you can make those challenges an opportunity, if there's something that you can turn into something else from the challenge, what can you learn about yourself from every single experience? Because you are somebody that has a lot to offer, and this could be a gift for you that you can then pass on.
Oh, Shelley, thank you so much. I know that I've learned something today as well. I hope everyone listening has. But unfortunately, I'm going to have to shoo you off back to the filming set in Manchester. We can't keep you all day. You need to get back to lights, camera, action. Shelley, thank you so much. And I hope everything goes really well for you. We're all watching everything you're doing.
It's been such a pleasure. Thanks for having me. Thank you.
Well, wasn't that just the most lovely conversation? I just find Shelley's ability to reflect on things that were hard in her life and to turn those into opportunities for growth so amazing. Even the fact that her military childhood led her to becoming more flexible throughout life, and that this has really helped her into moving into a career as an actor. I think that's something we can all work at. Right, well, sadly, that is all the time we've got for today. Thanks so much to Shelley for chatting to us on this episode of Squad, and to Will, Daisy, Duncan, and Caitlin for their brilliant Squad stories and questions. A couple of stars in the making there, I think. And thank you for listening. Please do follow and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. You'll find lots of other interesting stories waiting for you there. We'll see you next time.